Well, now we know that there is to be a big meeting on November the 15th in Washington to draw world leaders together and to try to devise a sort of manifesto for a new economic world order. It's been dubbed a new Bretton Woods. The meeting in 1944, generally seen as establishing the model that brokered the whole post-war and subsequent half-century of prosperity. It's led to headlines that Britons didn't think they'd see again, given his plunging popularity until recently. Thank God for Gordon Brown, was the London Times verdict. And it gave the UK Prime Minister the clear credit for leading the way towards the future. In Europe, their leader, Nicolas Sarkozy, has also been a big collaborator of Brown's, and they've warmed to him. Of course, it's actually being hosted by the US President. And one of our papers said this week that our Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd, had helped persuade Mr. Bush that this would be a good idea. Who's leading who? Which maybe reflects a deeper question here. How's the incredible financial turbulence affecting the politics of the international community? Who's bailing out who? Is influence shifting as one or other national group champions the ideas that change the agenda and heralds subtle power shifts that are sometimes hard to discern fully until after everything's resettled? But for a first draft of history, I'm joined now on Saturday Extra by two British journalists who've been keeping a close watch on the latest developments. Gillian Tett is assistant editor of the Financial Times, and David Smith is economics editor of the Sunday Times. Welcome now to Saturday Extra.
Not at all.
Could I ask you both, just for your quick responses, to the British public's reaction to the news that, in a way, Gordon Brown and Nicolas Sarkozy are leading the Americans, George W. Bush, to set up this meeting? There's mixed feelings out here in Australia as to who's leading who. How would you see it, Gillian Tett?
Well, I think the British public have been hit with one baffling blow after another in the last few months. I mean, this financial story has been having extraordinary twists and turns on almost a daily basis. And frankly, a few weeks ago, as you mentioned, Gordon Brown was riding pretty low in public opinion. The fact he's suddenly come out fighting has taken many people by surprise. Right now, people are waiting to see what he actually does. I think your average British person on the street is more concerned about what the credit crunch is going to do to their lives next.
Mm. And would you agree with that, David? I mean, is there any clarity? Is it a general blur?
No, I think there is some clarity. I mean, as Gillian says, a few weeks ago, you wouldn't have got a good price on Gordon Brown still being Prime Minister by Christmas. Now, people are almost talking as though he's going to be the next president of the world. So it's a big transformation. I think in terms of the way the British public sees it, and I think the government has been quite clever about this, is that they've made the argument quite consistently that this is an American-originated problem that happens to affect Britain. And whether people fully believe that or not, I think it's quite an effective story for a government that has its own problems, has problems with the public finances, has problems with the economy. If you can blame somebody else and you can also show that you're leading the Americans, it's quite good politics, I think.
Mm. It's interesting. I think Ross McKibben, who writes very interestingly from, he was writing in the London Review of Books just recently, said that in a way, Gordon Brown and Tony Blair decided that the English had to punch above their weight by being with the Americans, and that in fact Brown, even more than Blair, was obsessed with the American model for capital, for making capital, for growing capital, and that it was under his watch that a lot of these excesses occurred in England, which may or may not have flowed onto Europe. You know, in any shape or form, is he owning up to that?
I think the American model that he had in mind was a model of basic entrepreneurialism, you know, people setting up businesses, people setting up particularly high-tech businesses, people taking more risks. I don't think he necessarily had in mind the Wall Street model of American capitalism, people, investment banks taking excessive risks in financial markets. And to the extent that I think regulators in Britain were pretty blind to what was going on, you know, they are as guilty as anybody else. But I think the bits of the American model that Gordon Brown really admired was the sort of get-up-and-go spirit, setting up new businesses and so on. I don't think he necessarily bought into the whole Wall Street financial engineering story, but maybe he would have argued that that was part and parcel of the whole of the whole deal, if you like. You are right. He was keen on many aspects of the American model.
Mm. I mean, I would suggest at that point that I don't think Gordon Brown had the foggiest idea what was happening inside city dealing rooms or inside that, you know, corners of high finance, nor did most politicians on either side of the Atlantic or most regulators. And frankly, that was a failing, shocking, heinous crime of the last few years. What has become clear now, and it's one reason why they're talking about Bretton Woods, is that this is not a crisis just about a few dodgy loans in Ohio or other subprime afflicted parts of the country in America. It's basically a crisis that's forcing us to rethink the entire way that finance is done. And, I mean, Gordon Brown has really jumped on that bandwagon.
Yes, well, that's really, I suppose, what's intriguing many people here is we had a listener ring in, for instance, and say, don't say that Bush has started this process of having this big summit. Make sure that you name the owners for who they are, namely Brown and Sarkozy, namely Europe. Is that a debate that is underway? Is there in Europe and England, Gillian, who's going to guide this next stage?
I think, frankly, in some ways, it's almost premature to be talking about longer-term structural change right now, given that we've only just stepped back from a full-blown crisis. You know, one of the dangers in calling for a summit right now, and I can see why they want to do it politically, I mean, now is a good moment to seize the initiative to actually try and reshape some of the architecture that has gone so badly wrong. But the danger of calling for a summit right now is that you raise expectations that you have to deliver something. And having looked at the type of communiques and memos that are floating around between policymakers at the moment, it doesn't look to me, in terms of what I've seen, that they're actually going to have something dramatic to deliver. The type of reforms they've been talking about thus far look suspiciously similar to the type of ideas that have already been floating around in other international bodies like the Financial Stability Forum. So there is a risk in raising expectations so high that you can't actually meet them.
David, do you agree with that?
I agree with that very much. I mean, what Bretton Woods was all about in 1944, I mean, this wasn't a one-day summit. This was a three-week conference in a miserably cold hotel in New Hampshire, and it was designed to find a replacement for the economic system that had collapsed in the 1930s, the gold standard, and the breakdown of world trade as a result of all those tariffs that we saw in the 1930s, which were so damaging. So it was setting up a new economic system for the world. What you're talking about here essentially is closing the stable door after the horse has bolted, trying to make sure that regulators talk to each other, that regulators are able to keep a grasp on what the big investment banks and other institutions are doing. It's a regulatory initiative rather than a big, bold economic initiative, which Bretton Woods was. So I think I agree very much with Gillian. There's a danger of raising expectations beyond what can possibly be delivered at this summit and the summits that will follow it. This is not, to me, a new Bretton Woods.
Maybe not in someone. You haven't got someone of the stature of John Maynard Keynes at the centre of it who'd been thinking about it for years and years. But, you know, if you look at what I've seen put out about what Gordon Brown effectively is thinking about is the whole notion of maybe putting new credit ratio requirements on banks, that you have a proper central clearinghouse for a lot of these over-the-counter trades in, say, derivatives, this whole section of financial engineering that no one regulates at all, that you fundamentally alter the way you think about remuneration of bankers, etc. All of that, that's pretty profound in its own way, if it could be pulled together, isn't it, Gillian?
Well, I mean, no, because actually all of those proposals are already on the table. I mean, they're all in the Financial Stability Forum report that was out in the summer. They're all in the IIF report. I mean, they're all out there already. People agree that that's what's going to happen already. I mean, what Gordon Brown is essentially doing is sweeping up a bunch of proposals that are already out there and simply trying to give them a shining new package. Now, that in itself is no bad thing at all. I mean, it in many ways is a very sensible thing. Let's grab the political initiative, let's grab the sense of shock and try to present something that would look as if it's really delivering change to a pretty horrified electorate around the world. you know, that's all very worthy stuff, but it doesn't necessarily, in my view, add up to an entirely new Bretton Woods. But hey, you know, it's good stuff.
Mm. See, would you agree, David, that this is the sort that the collection that Gillian's just described would not have emanated from America in such a way? Is it something that comes from a different sensibility?
I think what we were more likely to get and what we will get in America is punishment. In other words, the people who made the mistake, the investment bankers and others, will be put in the dock. They will go before Congress. Some of them may go to prison. That is the American way with corporate misdeeds. And I think there will be quite a lot of that in the coming months and years. I just think that if you are talking about a new Bretton Woods, then the regulatory aspects that you have described very well there, I think they have to be part of it. But one also has to think about what I suppose underlay this problem. And that was the way that the world economy coped with recycling the surpluses from economies like China, the Middle East, and so on. And the real that that was created was that all those surpluses flowed essentially into Western economies. They created asset bubbles in Western economies, and we are coping with the effects of those asset bubbles. So the regulatory aspect is global imbalances, the kind of thing that the OECD and IMF have banged on about for years, are also very important. How do you have a system which prevents those global imbalances building up so rapidly? In fact, the original Bretton Woods system was pretty good at that, except for one respect, and that was that the US had to be the supplier of dollars to the world.
I would agree with that totally. The one thing I would say, though, is that in fact it's actually America that's been leading the charge for the creation of a centralized derivatives clearinghouse, and the Americans are ahead of the pack in terms of drawing up new capital adequacy regimes and stuff. So I think Gordon Brown seemed very clever in trying to seize those ideas, but they weren't originally from him at all.
David, what about the argument that I've certainly heard put here in the CBD about governments becoming the rating agencies? That one of the major problems in all of this that we're learning is the whole ratings agency system, which just didn't work and became completely distorted and some could even say corrupted. Is this gaining any traction?
I was saying to someone today that it surprises me that the rating agencies are so unchastened by their role in this disaster and are still in business. They're still putting out ratings. They're still putting out reports every day. They don't seem to be too troubled by the fact that they rated so many of these dodgy products AAA. Whether it's government, I don't know. But it seems to me that there are other organisations which don't have a commercial interest that could do this job rather better. I mean, it's a specialist job. But once there is a commercial interest in providing ratings, which of course the rating agencies have, then I think you have you have real difficulties, you have real conflicts of interest, and we've only really seen that in the last year or so, and it's a real problem, I think.
Look, just before I ask you both what you'd like to be on the table at a proper summit, I just also notice other amazing little developments that are happening. The Japanese, apparently, even though they're going into their own troubles, are apparently eyeing off the economic stage, seeing themselves as white knights and capital providers to the West. So, let alone how the Chinese are seeing this. What's your take, Gillian, on the notion that there is a real reordering happening before our eyes between East and West?
Well, I think the one lesson that we've learnt from seeing these events and seeing the last 10 years is the world can change in dramatic ways you least expect over a decade. I mean, a decade ago, I was sitting in Tokyo watching the Japanese banking system implode and watching the Americans supposedly rise to the rescue and give them advice on how to sort it out. And now I'm sitting, in fact, right now in New York, watching the complete reverse happen. I mean, frankly, I would never have believed it. I mean, heavens only knows where we'll be in 10 years' time. I'm more scared of predicting the future now than I've ever been.
You might be in Shanghai, or you might have moved to Beijing. Final question to you both. What would you ideally like to see on the table, David Smith, of a really proper new Bretton Woods-style summit?
Well, just to pick up on that last point, you've had this situation where Western economies have been really hit very hard by the credit crunch, whereas emerging market economies like China and India are obviously affected, but much less affected. So the shift of power that you touched upon there is happening a lot more quickly than I expected. So anything that has to be on the table has to involve those economies in quite a big way. We can't have this kind of apartheid between the G7 and the rest. The world is changing very rapidly. We need to look at the consequences that we've seen recently of excessive volatility in financial markets actually driving important economic changes in a way that is sometimes quite damaging. How do we function essentially in a world without capital controls is I think the big challenge. And this is the first, I suppose, financial crisis of the fully globalized era.
Gillian, do you think it'll... do you think there's going to be a big re-evaluation, or are we just going to get on, do a few changes in regulation and get on business as usual?
No, I think we are at an intellectual breakpoint here, certainly in America and to a lesser degree so far in Europe, but certainly in America at the moment. I wouldn't have said that 6 months ago. I mean, sorry, 6 weeks ago. I'm in the process of writing a book myself right now about this whole crisis, and certainly 6 weeks ago there was a feeling that it had been severe, but actually basically it would soon go back to business as usual. That is certainly not the case now in terms of, if you talk to people in New York, and even, I guess, to a lesser extent in London.
Look, thank you both very much indeed for that wide-ranging chat. David Smith from the Sunday Times, thank you.
Not at all. Thank you very much.
And Gillian Tett from the Financial Times, thank you very much to you.
Thank you to you as well.
And I might add that David's book, in the book stakes, is called The Dragon and the Elephant, China, India and the New World Order. And the publisher is Profile Books, and we'll keep an eye out for Gillian's book coming out. And I'd welcome your thoughts on this and what you'd like to see emerge. It's realistically speaking, what's the manifesto that you think might work in terms of how we pull everything back, well, into some sort of new order, which is what we're going to continue with next. We're going to discuss the principles of Islamic financial practices, because, in fact, they do offer something new and something old. It's 23 past eight.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.